Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Citizen Frame. We are here to continue our gritty British drama, as Trevor likes to call it.
Best of British.
Best of British. Well, there's a lot better British films.
Well, it's all subjective,
and the ones we're talking about. I mean,
these are some of the best. That's what I mean.
Good. I thought you meant Wicker Man would be in there because that was a piece of shit.
Bullshit. It's a classic. No, I mean,
classic piece of shit.
Nonsense. But no, this is more, obviously there are plenty of other classic British films out there, but these are just a little taster of some of them.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Oh, yeah, we're going to be doing Dead Man's Shoes today, and then we're going to take a little breather, get some sanity, and then I will pepper one in and just let you know the world is a happy place. And then we'll end with one of other Trevor's violent picks.
Yes.
Disturbing picks with the long Good Friday.
Yes.
A very young Helen Mirren, and God rest his soul, Bob Hoskins. All right. We're back here, so we're going to talk Dead Man's Shoes. It's a 2004 film directed by a man called Shane Meadows. He is not a household name in the business, well, worldwide, but over in England, he is, or the UK in general. He is known for a very popular series called This Is England, which is a extremely popular series.
Yes.
I don't know if it's still being produced.
No. They wrapped it up a few years ago with This Is England 1990. And it featured a it's quite a harrowing and brutal series anyway, and sort of gritty. But it finishes with a very sort of, let's just say, powerful and harrowing resolution for the character of Combo. And it's just brilliant writing. You know, superb writing, but also at the same time harrowing and pretty bloody depressing, you know?
Yeah. Like most of your average movie picks.
Yes, pretty much, yeah.
All right. Yeah, so this is kind of a very close and I can't think of the word. Why am I not thinking of the word? Probably because it's Sunday morning.
Yeah, homage?
No, it's a very close piece of work between Shane Meadows and Paddy Considine, who
yes, collaboration.
Considine. Considine. Is it Considine?
Bible call him Paddy Considine.
Considine. Paddy Considine. They both wrote and produced this. And then obviously Shane Meadows directed it. They've worked a few times together. So there's obviously a good working relationship there. I'm actually surprised Shane Meadows didn't kind of go outside the box more. Maybe go more mainstream. Kind of like what Scorsese did, because he's got a Scorsese kind of feel to him, or even a Sam Peckinpah kind of feel.
Yeah, yeah.
And where, he just pulls no punches.
Yes. And he's also, yeah.
No, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, there's with the Shane Meadows films, they're all sort of set in sort of, gritty estates in the Midlands. So there's a certain sort of semi-autobiographical aspect to them. So, but yes, I know what you mean.
So, yeah, well, I mean, I know it's a different environment, but it's got a very taxi driver feel to it, mean streets feel to
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
Which, again, it's going back to the 70s. That's the U.S. kind of version of what Shane Meadows is doing, going back to that 70s gritty. Now, when we say gritty violence isn't necessarily violence as we know, as in, there's different tones where there's gore. Yes. There's senseless violence, there's gun shooting violence, there's all different forms of violence. Gritty isn't necessarily seeing, it's not bloody and guts and all that. It's mainly just real.
Exactly. It's to do with the tone, but also gritty, especially in terms of films like this, the whole sort of kitchen sink, British drama, which were big in the 60s as well. But gritty can also mean, set in a working class area, a working class town in the north of England, or in this case, the Midlands. It can also to do with the dialogue of the characters and stuff,
Yeah, well, it doesn't have to be in the Midlands, though. It could be a perfect example. Warriors, New York, set in New York, in the underbelly of New York. So, so location, even whether it's outside in the countryside to a major city, but I think it's the tone of the film. And the gritty came really in the 70s. with movies. Well, it started in late 60s with Bullet, and then he got like Dirty Harry, and then he got French Connection. You yes. know, then you've got the Warriors, the Sam Peckinpah movement. You've got all this stuff. Straw Dogs would be a perfect example. And yes. all these.
I would say as well, even going back further, you would have had those Italian neorealism films, you know, like Bicycle Thief and stuff like that. This is, in ways, Dead Man's Shoes is a neorealism film too. It's almost, in a way, documentary style. You know, you have things like, you know, whenever all those sort of thugs or, you know, those drug dealers, those scumbags are like, they're talking over each other and stuff. And that's not the professional way, you know, for like, you know, professional film or whatever. But it's a certain style, and it works here, where they're like, you know, their lines of dialogue overlap and stuff, and they're talking over each other, but it's like, the way real people do in the real world.
Kind of like this, you know? Podcast.
Yes, exactly. The way people do in the real world.
Well, and it adds to that. I mentioned that.
That level of realism.
Where Meadows kind of does that, but again, Scorsese does that all the time, especially yeah. when he's had when Goodfellas is in Casino, when you have all these mob guys inside just having a big Italian dinner. And they're just yes. all over talking. But you're still mesmerized, even though you kind of don't know what they're saying. You're just looking for key words.
It adds to the realism of it, yeah. and it drags you into their world.
Well, let's jump into it and see if it is. This is a very beloved film. I know it did. It's got an audience in the States because that's where I saw it. I saw it in the independent cinema on Lake Street, and I totally forgot what it's called, but. Uptown Theater, I think it was called, or something. I can't remember now. But it definitely has its audience in the U.S., but yeah. not as big as it would be as it is over here. All right, so we've got Paddy Considine, Gary Stretch, Toby Kebbell, his first movie. I actually like Toby Kebbell a lot.
Yeah,
Stuart Wolfenden and Neil Bell. These guys are all playing Richard, Sony, Anthony, Herbie, Saz, Tuff, Big Al, Marie, Mark, Patty, and Gypsy John. Those are pretty much your characters. And they're pretty much all not going to end up well. So it's pretty much simple. Very simple story. But a vet, he comes back. He's obviously dealing some post-traumatic stress himself, obviously, where he finds out that his brother has been pretty much brutalized and humiliated by a group of little bullies, really bullies. They're not these yes. badasses as they think they are, and we'll come to that.
They're scumbags.
And he decides yeah. it, and his the brother's already mentally ill, mentally challenged, and so he decides it's time to get revenge. And it's the opening sequence is quite nice. It's they have this folk music, unlike when we got a shithole. Fucking Wicker Man. This has good, solid, beautiful Irish, not Irish, well, it could be whatever. It's
Celtic. It? Almost.
Yeah, Celtic almost. Folk music playing in the background. And all it is two brothers walking the countryside. And it's nice. It's just as the credits roll. And it's a nice little kind of this calmness before the storm. And it's and then obviously as they walk it through the fields and on the hill through the hills, and they walk into this small town where he's about to unleash his wrath.
Yes, his vengeance and fury.
Get you. Yeah. So it's broken down by days, which I like because I like my timestamps.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's like chapters.
So I got day one, and there's a great line where he says. It's just a voiceover. So right now, Aunt Richard is narrating, but it's not like he narrates the film or anything. It's just one line, pretty much, he says, and it's
yes.
He has to get revenge because he has the line: "God will forgive them and allow them to heaven." I can't live with that. Oh,
yeah, sets it up. Just sets it up.
That's all you need.
Yeah,
and that goes down to the writing. Mm-hmm. And the execution of when to drop that line in. And it's pretty much the opening line of the film. So.
And it's so simplistic and short, but it's so powerful at the same time and sets it up.
And what also works for the film is its direction as it cuts away to flashbacks, and the flashbacks are done in a grainy, you know, camcorder kind of feel to it. And it's black and white.
Black and white.
And it's to let you know they're establishing the events that took place where Anthony was abused. They filled him with drugs, had him get laid. That scene's so dreadful to watch, per guy.
Yeah, but there's also the heavy suggestion that they, well, Sonny anyway, was sexually abused.
Yes.
You know,
in the kitchen.
Basically, yeah. Yes. Physically abusing him. He had some terrible punch. Yeah,
I mean, we won't go through all the flashbacks. We'll hold the last flashback for the end. But that's pretty much how the film goes.
Yeah.
Cuts back. So he kind of comes into town, and he starts by taunting them. Pretty much with Herbie is the one that taunts first in the pool hall.
Yeah.
And Patty just gives his glare. It reminds me of The Clown and The Terrifier. Has a scene in The Terrifier where he just stares with his girl in the diner, and it's fucking terrifying. And obviously this clown's got makeup and all, so it helps, you know, it helps it be more creepy.
Yes.
But this guy, Patty sells it by just staring at him. And then, Herbie's all badass. See, the funny thing about the film is these guys are just punks, all right? They're not like you get Scorsese kind of gangsters, you know?
They think they're badasses, but they're not.
They're
really
not badasses. They're just bullies who have it easy in a small town where no one's really going to fuck with them because they just don't have time
for them. And in fact, Richard even says, it's basically, he's talking to, you know, his brother Anthony. He says, do you know why they give drugs to children? It's good because they're weak-minded themselves. And that's what these guys are. They're weak-minded fools. They're pathetic. Yeah, so they are. I mean, but at the same time, they've done horrible things. They're scumbags as well.
Yeah, they're scumbags. But when they're finally challenged, they're fucked because they're just fucking ass. They're losers.
They're pathetic.
That's pretty much what the film kind of shows, especially with Sonny, because you think Sonny's going to be the badass of the group. But all we saw him was pick on his team, or a bunch of idiots themselves, and pick on a kid who's mentally challenged. Yeah, he's a real hero.
Yep. Just a bully.
Yeah.
A thug. Oh, by the way, I would say as well, just as a bit of a throwaway fact, Sonny is played by a professional boxer, Gary Stretch, who's actually very good at it, you know, for a non-actor.
Yeah, it's a good role for him. If that's true about him, I didn't know that.
He's not an actor.
I mean, he plays it well because you mentioned there's homosexual tendencies there as well. And
repressed,
it's kind of a role that you got to kind of mix it up a little bit and play different kinds of characters in this sort of.
Exactly. There's layers to it.
So for him to do that just out of the box, it's not as good as Conor McGregor in Roadhouse.
I haven't seen it yet, but I've heard about it.
It's actually pretty good. I think we should do the Roadhouse films, all three. There's actually three people.
A Roadhouse retrospective.
That would take 10 minutes, but what the hell?
Then we'll have Conor McGregor coming after us.
for Conor.
Yeah. I get paid well.
So, a couple of things I don't get. How does he know who or what happened to his brother?
Well, yes, I was thinking about this as well, and some people have said that it's a massive plot hole. I would imagine that he would have heard rumors. People would have said he would have known that Anthony was hanging about with those guys. He wouldn't have known exact specifics, but he would have been well in the know. He was a smart guy, you know what I mean, Richard. So, but he would have done his recce, and he would have done his detective work, possibly with, you know, the young girl, the young woman who is in the flashback scenes, and we see her briefly in the present day scenes. He would have questioned people and found out. That's the way it is in my head anyway. But some people have accused it of being a massive plot hole. How did he know exactly? Well, he would have known obviously he would have known Anthony died.
Yeah, but that's it.
But then he would have investigated.
I know.
But he would have investigated.
You know, it is something they could have, as they say in the business, one mind fix could have fixed that. He could have.
Yeah.
I know what you're saying. All you needed was a scene where he sat down with somebody you don't have to see his face, and he pays him, and he goes, thanks for the info. That's all we needed.
Yeah.
Something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know what you're saying.
Needed that. Because it's a smart little film, and it's execution. So it did bother me a bit. But
yeah,
again, it's just a revenge thriller. Or is it?
Yes.
Dun, 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 dun. You guys haven't seen Dead Man's Shoes. There is a nice little twist in this film that I forgot about. So just to let you know, if you listen to us and you don't remember the film that much,
there's a massive spoiler coming.
There's a big spoiler coming. So, fuck it. Just keep listening. I don't give a shit. All right. But I do like his style, and how he works. So he's got this fucking creepy-ass gas mask.
Yeah.
It's right there. You almost turn into a slasher film. And when Herbie's 100%. Coming down the stairs, he's just staring at him through the doorway. And so Herbie panics
yes.
and gets all his mates, all the gang to come down. He's down here, somebody with a gas mask. Down. And he has a tendency to distract. So what he does is he lures them yep. out of a location so he can go in and do some damage to theirs. So he does this a couple of times, including with Mark's kids.
Yeah.
So he goes yes. in and he writes, what does he put? Cheyenne stoking?
Yes, it's a phrase that used to be put on patients in hospitals' beds who were very ill, and it basically means death is imminent.
Yeah,
death is coming.
It's a breathing pattern that leads to death. If you have this breathing yes. pattern, you're yes. dying
uh-huh.
or something.
Yeah,
creepy,
it's on the way.
Actually,
yes, yes,
especially with
yeah. He also steals their drugs.
He takes everything from them.
He starts which we'll come back to later.
We only get them all high.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's fucking amazing scene. So it's actually quite terrifying.
It is.
So
This film definitely borders on horror. It has the horror because of the mask, little things like that. But it also has, it almost has a reverse version. This is going to sound like weird, of A Clockwork Orange, where it's not about the baddies, it's about the goodies. But the goodie is acting like the baddies,
yes.
but you're rooting for him. If that makes any sense.
Yeah.
The scenes make me feel uneasy. And the scene where he ODs, not ODs, but he caused them to get ultimately high and he executes them in that scene.
Yeah.
It felt like the scene in Clockwork Orange when they go to that rich man's manor. And they rape the wife
yes.
and blah, blah, blah.
Yes, I know what you
even
mean.
Though they're the baddies, it makes you uncomfortable. Even though he's the goodie, I was a little uncomfortable with it because it was gritty
yes.
and real.
Well, I mean, at the very end then as well, in that final scene with, you know, the guy Mark, then you realize, well, Richard then talks. Look, we'll get to it.
Don't jump ahead.
Richard.
Yeah, Mark's not in the picture yet. Mark's not in the picture yet.
Yes. Although, if you watch very closely, in the early flashback scenes, you catch glimpses of Mark.
Oh, we know he's there.
Yeah,
yes. Mark's coming up. There's another plot hole
yeah.
coming up, and we'll talk about that one. That's with Mark. Yeah, it's got a lot of uncomfortableness to it, a rawness to it. And
yes.
But at the same time, like Scorsese, Meadows will pepper in some humor. Just to let you know.
Oh, absolutely. Have,
like,
dark
the,
humor.
I'm sorry. The car thing's the funniest thing. It's like a clown car, guys. You can see in this film. I mean, and each time they're picking some of the bullies up, they're getting crammed in. It's like the Flintstones car.
Yeah. Yeah. But also, I would say as well, whatever he has spray painted them, you know, as clowns to some of them. But the guy, you know, the guy with the skinhead who has, you know, and they're all blaming each other at first, but he's got the knob written on the back of his the fucking £500 this jacket cost
yeah,
me.
Well, I think that was,
but he still wears it.
Yeah, it was Gypsy John and Big Al, or I think Sonny
yeah,
and Sonny was obviously. Yeah, he ended up, they were so passed out that he ended up painting their faces and they didn't realize it when they answered the door with the idiots.
Yeah, basically clown makeup on.
And
yeah.
Then you have another flashback again. We won't go through the flashbacks because we kind of told you what they
yes.
did to him. But yeah, you see the Sonny scene. It's where Sonny kind of asked for a blowjob from
yes.
from Anthony.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he gets punched. Yeah.
And it's almost with that as well. It's almost like Sonny is revulsed with himself, but he's taking it out on Anthony, his anger, and you know, and it's just because Anthony is weak and so easy to basically bully and hit, you know. It's disturbing to watch. It's a tough watch at times, this, you know.
When finally Richard confronts Sonny for the first time.
Brilliant scene.
And he goes up to him and he goes, "Listen, you leave now and don't look back."
Mm-hmm.
"Or you're over." That's all he says to him. "You're over."
Yeah.
And he goes, "I was literally right next to you."
Mm-hmm.
"And I could have cut your leg right off, or your dick right off." I can't remember what he says.
No, his throat.
"But yeah, I could have cut your throat right there."
Yeah.
I mean, he just pretty much lays it out for him.
Yeah.
But Sonny is so fucking arrogant, and he thinks he's a badass that he's not.
Mm-hmm.
He's just going to, you know, fight back.
I love whenever Sonny gets out of the car and he's like, he starts off, he goes, "You know, some of the guys had," and straight away Richard just butts in and goes, "It was me."
Yeah,
I did
it.
He goes, "You're right there, you know, in the palm of his hand, you're right fucking there, you know." And you can see the rage of Richard, and you know he's itching, you know, it's just brilliantly acted by Considine.
Yeah, you know, he just wants to go all fucking gung-ho on him right there.
Yeah.
But he's got to have patience.
Yeah.
And that's where he kills Gypsy Jones. I believe it's Gypsy Jones when he kills, that they find in the bathroom.
Yes. With the axe. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We don't see it, but we just see the aftermath.
Yeah. We see the aftermath.
Yeah, we don't need to see it.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Gypsy Jones, the other one, though, I forget the name of that character, you know, the first one that's bumped off. I could be wrong here, but I think Gypsy Jones, the guy that runs away and then ends up on a suitcase, let's just say.
No, that's tough.
Yes, sorry, you're right. That is Gypsy John then. Yeah, you're right.
Big L gets shot when he's going to bring the money, but he's just going to bring them out. Now, there's a weird scene, and you might be able to explain this. When they find their buddy in the bathroom, all, you know, bloody and dead and shit.
Yes.
Sonny cries.
Yes.
So it was weird because here's this guy who's been introduced as this pretty much pig and the big intimidator, supposedly.
Yeah.
And he cries. And I'm thinking, why?
I think it's because they were just, those two guys were very close. And I think that it's a combination of things. It's also connected to the scene that just happened before it, where Richard basically completely psychs him out and puts his shits up. And so I think there's a lot going on. I think it's a rare showing of emotion and how he's feeling. And there's a lot going on in terms of emotion, in terms of fear. You know, I think inside, deep down, he's terrified. Sonny is just a very weak man, you know, in so many respects, but he puts on this bravado which basically manifests itself as being a complete asshole and thug, essentially a bully. But I think this is just a rare glimpse of basically he is terrified, but also I think he was quite close to Gypsy John as well.
I think he just knows he's fucked.
Yeah, that as well, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
But I think there's a lot going on, but I think that's certainly one of the factors.
And then we go back to kind of the comedy aspect during it's kind of a funny scene, when they make Big Al walk over to Anthony's, where Richard's staying, and to give him money, but it's to lure him out, and then Sonny was going to shoot him. But then Sonny ends up blowing Big Al's head, and then everyone starts yelling at him, "You shot Big Al." I mean, these guys.
And then your mom,
there's a very Reservoir Dogs feel to these kind of guys in a little bit.
Oh yeah,
they're not, you know, Reservoir Dogs are not fuck ups. But in this one, the way they talk to each other, there's a very Reservoir Dogs feel.
Realistic. Yeah, it goes back to the neorealism again. And your man shoots Alan. He's calling him by his full name. Are you all right?
His head's blown off.
And he goes, "You shot Al, you twat! You shot him dead, you twat!" You know? It just shows you they're just complete useless losers. Yeah. You know, idiots, way out of their depth.
And then
against the professional soldier.
Then after Sonny actually kills Big Al, tough coat. He's panicking. He goes, I'm leaving. I'm not staying around. But he's the one who has the car.
Yeah.
So they're at the gas station. Yes. He goes, I'm done. And Sonny's like, you leave. You better not come back. He goes, I don't plan on coming back. And then the next scene, Herbie, Sonny, and Solace have to walk back because Tough is the one who owns the car.
That's right. Yeah. But he winds up in a suitcase. You know, he doesn't get too far. So he does.
So, yeah, so he gets this is the scene we're talking about where he gets them high with the drugs he stole.
Yes, their own
drugs. And he pretty much takes them out pretty disturbingly, one by one. And first, actually taking out Sonny, which you figured he'd be the last.
I love that because it adds to the realism where it's a case of it's not like a big final showdown with the big bad guy. He gets Sonny first. Just drags him. There's no big fight. There's no big struggle. Drags him into the game. The brutal realism. Drags him into the kitchen. Puts a plastic fucking carrier bag around his head so he doesn't get covered in blood himself. And then just pulls out a fucking piece and shoots him dead.
Brutal. But again, played up.
Execution.
The reason he was getting them high was A, so they couldn't fight back. But I don't think it's because he couldn't handle them. I think he did that to make them defenseless like his brother was.
Yes, because his brother, it was to torment them.
Yeah.
Because they spiked his brother.
Yeah. And while his brother was already mentally challenged in the first place.
They forced him to take acid.
So
that really fucked his head.
Yeah. And then you add that to it. So that's what he was really doing. Not because he could have gone in there and just kicked their ass. But there even before the brutalization of killing Sonny and these guys, there's a funny ass scene where they're all in the toilet. And he's taking a dump. He's throwing up, and because he's giving him obviously laxatives of some sort as well. God! The whole scene is quite funny. And then you turn the tables on us.
Yeah. After he spiked them with all sorts, but including acid. But you can see them, and they don't quite realize at first what's going on. But you can see them because they're all completely wiped out, and they're doing weights, and they're. Then you see them cleaning the kitchen and stuff, which is actually very funny. And your man's talking shit about pot noodles, or you could just use because they're all talking dead fast because they're off their loaf spiked. And he's talking about pot noodle containers. You could just use them as cups and all this here. Then they're all up in the bathroom because they're all terrified of being, alone because of Richard coming. So they're all up in the bathroom together. Sonny's taking a bath. Thing's taking a shit. And your other man goes, I can smell it from here. Just really well played.
And then once he takes out, he kills Saz by putting his nose into his brain. That's how he kills him. And then Herbie's.
I love the lead up to that actually, where he thinks are you the devil? I mean, we'll get to that later on, but there's a lot of sort of biblical references here throughout. It's almost like a biblical revenge story. But yes, sorry, go ahead.
So you got Herbie, the one he's kind of been teasing the whole time.
Yes.
I thought he would let go. But you kind of knew. But when he makes him open the suitcase and you see Tough all piled up in the suitcase, that's a fucking creepy scene.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. That isn't it.
Yeah, good model there.
Get back to the horror.
Exactly.
The
exaggeration. Oh, the overkill, I guess, pardon the pun.
Yes.
And he wants to let him go. And Herbie, I don't know his whole journey, but I thought he let him go. But he hugs him and then gives him, obviously, a knife into the guts. Heart, I think.
Mm-hmm. It's in the side anyway. It's a killer blow, no matter what. But, I would say the guy who plays Herbie is actually a really good actor. He totally sells that, and especially in those, he becomes like a pathetic little boy, whenever Richard has him sort of there at the end, and he really does sell it, but at first, at the start, he's Jack of the Lad, and he's selling the drugs in the bar, and I think he's one of those, apart from obviously Considine and Toby Kebbell, and even, Gary Stretch, I think he's certainly one of the best actors in it.
Well, we talked about the luring out. He does this when he goes to Mark's home, who's outside.
Well, first of all, that's like another twist where you find out there was another guy there that he gets out of Herbie.
I knew there was another guy coming. I don't know what the twist was on this one. Mm-hmm. I can't remember. I didn't see it as a twist, though. I think he asked.
Right.
No,
right.
Yeah, he asked, where is he? I don't think he asked. He knew. He wanted to know where he was, and then he's that's just location.
I wanted to know.
Not that he was. That yes, that, yes, we all knew Mark was there, but we just don't know where he lives. So when okay, so he gives the kids, Mark's kids, his son, the mask, the gas mask he's been haunting the other guys with,
and the knife
to get the father Mark out of the house, and they go look in the park for this guy who gave them this mask. Which is obviously clearly Richard. So Richard then walks to the house, knocks on the door, and talks to his wife for a bit. Just a basic conversation, nothing.
Yes.
And for some reason, this conversation changes Richard, and I don't understand why. And this is where,
I will tell you.
So he leaves the house, and Mark ends up telling the wife the story of who this man is and why he's here.
Yeah.
It's a nice scene, actually. He doesn't go through the whole. This is where you find out and plot twist people that they left him at an abandoned farm somewhere. And he ended up hanging himself. Mark wanted to go back to let him out because he knew he didn't do much, but he was still there.
Yes.
He was still an accomplice, whether he did nothing or not. He
didn't do anything to stop it. That was the problem.
That was his guilt.
Yes.
And the great thing about this, I had in my notes, I didn't want to bring it up right away because people might have not have seen the film yet. But I always thought how Shane Meadows directed it was we had, these gritty black and white flashbacks of what was happening to Anthony as the film goes on. Then you had some comic relief, you know, with the car and the bumbling idiots that they are.
Yeah.
To tone down the violence, I guess you can say. And then you have these nice little conversations between Anthony and Richard, whether it's them sitting in, they're sitting in some kind of shed or something. They're just talking. And this is where they really knew that Anthony was, you know, not the right frame of mind, who's mentally challenged a bit.
Yes.
And you really liked the brother dynamic. And I was getting into this. I was like, wow, this, you know, it kind of takes away out of the brutality of what we're watching. And you can kind of understand why Richard is defending his little brother like this. And because you really like their bond. I had no clue. And I've seen this before. And I must have forgot. Don't know how I forgot. But the twist is he's not really there because we find out that the poor kid hung himself where they left him there. And so he's never been.
That's pretty such much, a tough scene.
It is.
You know, that flashback because they're tormenting the poor child. Well, what he is, he certainly has the mind of a child. And it's such a tough scene to watch where they're filling full of acid. Then they're saying, we're going to take you to the devil's house. The kid freaks out. They beat him up. They put him on a leash, the tie a rope around his neck, put him on a leash. They're spitting on him, all sorts, tormenting the poor child. It's a brutal scene to watch. And then, on top of that, because he is so freaked out, he kills himself. He hangs himself. Brutal.
So
that's such a powerful twist.
Yes, Sixth Sense.
Yeah.
Well, there's
the ghost.
There's the horror element. So he brings Mark. He pretty much kidnaps Mark, and he tells him, you're coming with me. And he brings him to a place where he obviously hung himself.
Yeah.
Why did he kill Mark?
Because whenever he goes to Mark's house and he's talking to his wife and he's going, you're a good mother, he realizes, I mean, Richard says this, he basically realizes that this guy, Mark, is not as bad as the others. And in fact, he's really got his life together. He's not a scumbag. You know what I mean?
I'm still not sold on that. I thought that too. Yeah, because he gives him the knife. He wants him to end this and by killing him.
He says, I'm the monster.
No, he doesn't. He says, you're supposed to be the monster. Yeah, but it's me, is what he
says.
But
now I'm the beast.
How does he know he didn't do anything?
Well,
you know, that's my point. You can't fix that with just like, oh, he's got a kid.
I think it is a plot hole.
It's a pretty big plot hole. I mean, I still go with it. But
yes,
given us fun journey and disturbing journey, and he gave us one hell of a twist, and then you're okay.
It could be explained that maybe Richard has been filled in and he's been talking to someone during his investigations, which I'm presuming he did. We'll never see any of this on the screen. But someone filled him in and said, you know, they'd heard that basically Mark didn't do anything. Nah. Although Mark does say, you know, when Richard said to him, what did you do? He goes, no, I said, what did you do? And then he says, I didn't stop it. That's what it was. And so you could say maybe that then Richard believes him.
Okay.
But, you know, it's a bit confused. But basically, see this film, this whole journey, and you now realize it, essentially, although it takes you a couple of times at least to realize it. This film is about Richard's guilt because Richard was embarrassed about Anthony whenever he was alive. He seen him as an embarrassment. He even admits it later on. He says, oh, my brother, he was a spastic, you know, all this here sort of thing. And I'm not using that word, by the way, lightly, because that's what he says in the film. He goes and he sort of mocks him, you know, makes fun of him. And this is about Richard's guilt because now there's a line in one of the first flashback scenes where whenever Sonny, you know, suggests that he's sexually abusing Anthony, but he also said, your brother ran away to the army because he was embarrassed by you. You were an embarrassment to him. And it's awful scene, like, you know, brutal, you know, I don't mean awful. I mean, you know, harrowing more, but basically I think that scene, Sonny was telling the truth. Actually, I think Richard did go off to the army, was indeed embarrassed about Anthony, but also see the whole ghost Anthony, essentially, you know, where Anthony, Richard is basically talking to Anthony in his head. I think that is Richard trying to idealize being a better big brother to Anthony and not having run off and considering him an embarrassment, and his guilt of leaving Anthony in his own, but basically, and he died. He considers himself, you know, he's racked with guilt. He blames himself.
Well, that's fair. That makes sense, I guess. Sometimes you don't need to be spoon-fed it.
Yeah.
You know, you gotta read between the lines. And
exactly.
I can see that, I suppose.
Yeah.
You know, it's an independent film.
It's certainly got,
if you guys like Scorsese, who I named quite a bit, Peckinpah, especially 70s Peckinpah and Scorsese.
Yeah.
Even somewhat Tarantino style. Oh, yeah. It's definitely got all those three in there. So if you enjoy their works, you definitely get like Dead Man's Shoes. I know it's very beloved over here. I know a couple of people I work with who really, really, it's one of their favorites. I don't know if I could rewatch it. You know what I mean? It's one of those films that I feel like gritty is tough to keep. The Warriors kind of plays it to more. There's the fantasy, it's more stylistic. And you can kind of rewatchability to enjoy it. Something like this, though, I don't know if I could get. And that's not a bad thing, guys. That doesn't make it a bad movie at all. It makes it quite a good film because it's done its job. But I think it's a one-off for me. I don't think I can view it again. Unless I've seen it twice now because I did it for the podcast twice. So that's three times altogether. So
yes,
I took what I got out of it. Bravo to the filmmakers and Patty and the gang. I just don't think it's for me to watch again. However,
you would have to be in the right frame of mind to watch it, I think, because it can't be so depressing. I showed this to a friend one time. We were just hanging out and looking for a film to watch. Here, I will stick that on you, mate. And he described it by the end as probably the most depressing but brilliant things you'd ever seen in his life.
Yeah, that's a great drama. I mean, that's just the way those was work. I just don't think I could. Yeah, I'm gonna buy that and put it and watch it. You know, I just don't know what it is. There's something about it, and there's quite a few films that would be like that. But it's not for bad reasons. It's because they did their job.
Yes. No. I get you. I get you. I personally consider it's one of my all time favorite films. You know, I think it's one of the greatest British films ever made. But you know, it's all, like I say, it's all, you know. You know, people can disagree with me, no problem at all. But it's one of my all-time favorites. I think, as I was saying earlier, it's almost like a biblical revenge, and there's so many religious allusions there as well, you know, with the whole church setting at the end, you know, where Anthony dies and the finale is, and there's that choir at the end after Richard dies, you know, whenever Mark makes him kill him. So, I just think it's brilliant.
Well, there you go. Dead Man Shoes. At least we both liked that one over the last piece of shit.
Yeah.
Fucking Wicker Man. Fuck me. How can you?
The Wicker Man.
Think this is brilliant and you think Wicker Man.
Corn, wheat, and barley.
All right. So it is. We're going to tone it a bit here. We're going to end with a long Good Friday at the end of, for the end of the month here. Not end of the month. We're kind of all over the place. We're at the beginning of the month.
Yes.
We don't really have months anymore. We just go with it. But
yeah,
we're going to pepper in
whatever.
Just a more relaxing film. But I decided that I'm not going to go outside the box. I was going to pick like Con Air or something like that. But I'm going to keep it in the UK film realm. All right. So instead of going pretty crime drama, we're going to do comedy drama. So I have picked, we are going to do The Full Monty.
Okay. Yeah. Fair enough.
Now,
no problem.
I said The Full Monty and he paused. And I'll tell you why, people. And this is me being serious. Trevor is sick. If it doesn't have an X rating, or it hasn't been banned, or graphic deaths, killer trees, naked virgins,
no, people, mermaids,
lighthouse keepers who are Canadian lumberjacks, he doesn't want anything to do with it. But I'm going to pepper in the film that was huge in the States. And I remember seeing it in the theater and adoring it. And I want to see if it still holds up today.
Okay. I was just, to be honest, I was just relieved. I was waiting on it. I was just relieved that you did not say Four Weddings and a Funeral.
You know what's funny?
Or Love Actually, or some shit like that.
Just for the argument, but I love Four Weddings and a Funeral. So, but I was going to do Notting Hill. Because I was thinking, Hugh Grant, because I like Hugh Grant a lot. But I decided, we'll jump in The Full Monty.
Yeah, yeah, okay. I like it. Robert Carlyle. Yeah.
All right. So next up, there we go.
Here and Trevor are going
instead of Monty. Instead of naked old people, naked men of all ages. So wrong.
Yeah.
So wrong.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Thanks for giving us a listen. You can reach out to us on Instagram at CitizenFrame_podcast. And, of course, on Facebook. The new issue of Phantasmagoria is out now. The Hellraiser Special Edition, which is available on Amazon worldwide and locally here in Belfast at Forbidden Planet and other stores within the U.S.
Yep.
Thanks for joining us. We're going to wrap this one up. It's a Sunday morning. I'm going to go see The First Omen, as you do on a Sunday morning.
On the Sabbath.
Oh, yeah. And that's all I've got for you.